Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road. And that's not going to be taken away from us.
What I love in hurling, I love players that will never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. It's over the bar.
Hello and welcome to the RTE GAA podcast. I'm Mikey Stafford. I hope you're all doing well. So after this weekend, we will have 8 counties left in the All-Ireland Football and Hurling Championships. It's been a sprint rather than a marathon, but it's been interesting. And this weekend, no less so. So I'm delighted to have with me Rory O'Neill, as always, Colm Keyes, GAA correspondent for the Irish Independent, and Mr. Kevin McStay. Gentlemen, are we all well?
Hey, Mikey.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Rory. Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
Hi, Colm. Hi, lads. How are you?
Yes.
Right. So, football's taking centre stage this week. We'll have Anthony Daly on in a little while to look at the two hurling quarterfinals between Tipperary and Galway and Waterford and Clare. But for now, we will focus on the provincial finals, the much maligned at times football finals. But there's a little bit of interest, a little bit of colour around them this year. Well, there always is in some of them. So I think we'll start with Munster, which is a novel pairing. Kevin, we are talking to Brendan Cummins, friend of the podcast and well-known to us all, for an article on the website this week, because he was playing, the last time these two played in a Munster final, and I think The Rock was involved for Cork as well.
So I was at the game.
Yeah, 2002.
When was that? When was it?
2002. Went to a replay, which Cork won 123-7. So there... I don't think anybody foresees this one being quite that wide a margin, Kevin. It is actually, let's be honest, when we get on to talk about Leinster, we're looking at a county going for 10 in a row. You know, we all thought Kerry were going to make it 8, I think, in a row this year. So it's nice to have this pairing in the final. I think everybody would agree, isn't it?
Yeah, it's novel enough. But even though they've met it, they've been a good few times in recent years, you know, in different shapes and forms. And Tipperary have done well in it. But I'm kind of, maybe it's the Mayo hat in me, but even from the Cork-Tipperary perspective, I'm looking beyond the Munster final. Because while, you know, obviously these are Munster medals that are up for grabs, the prize is even greater for either Cork or Tip, obviously, because they'd be heading into a semi-final that they'd have every sense themselves, and rightly so, in my view, that they'd have a right good shot in a semi-final against what we think is not a bad looking Mayo team, but not in any way proven or anything like that. So there would be strong possibilities. And I think especially for Cork lads, you know, I think they will be the ones that will say, look, we took the Giants out. They're out, gone, not coming back. No back door. So let's not make a hames of this now. Let's be ultra professional about this. Cop ourselves on. This is the chance of a lifetime, and we can relaunch this 10 years of misery that Cork football has had, because it's a very proud football county. I was only reminded yesterday, I'm sure a name you'll know, Rory, John Fintan Daly was on to me, on about, you know, the massive, massive amount of football that's played in Cork. 250 clubs, 5 grades of football. It's more than the whole of Munster put together, he was reminding me, and so on.
And
so
more than hurling, Kevin. More than hurling.
And that was the point he was making. More, even though we all have this kind of, I won't say fake news, but totally. a false narrative. It is a false narrative that the hurlers, like, it's the passion that, you know, the county love the hurlers, but there's a lot more football going on. Anyway, that's almost an aside. I think this is, I don't see Cork losing this, Mikey. I don't. I don't know the health bulletins with Tipperary. Colm might know more about Stephen O'Brien and a few others. And they need to be at full strength and at full tilt to beat Cork, is my view. I have a lot of respect for Cork. I did the semi-final, as you know, fellas, the myself and Ger were doing the commentary. And Cork were very, very decent. Cork are decent in the places where they need to be decent. They have a very, very good midfield. I would go as far as say as good a midfield as probably left in the championship. And they have a very tidy full forward line and will only get better as a result of beating Kerry. They can only get better. If they were to fall back now, well, I would say that is unforgivable.
Disaster. Yes. So they're strong in midfield, which is where Tipperary did have issues in Stephen O'Brien and Jack Kennedy, Colm. But riding in on a big swan is Colin O'Riordan. Is there any fear this man's actually going to start this match, considering they do have injury problems in midfield?
Don't see him starting, Mike, but I see him being very actively involved. I was just thinking about O'Riordan and in the context of the players that have come back and played for their counties, Conor McKenna and Conor Glass. I would say you're probably talking about the three best players in McKenna, Glass, in terms of footballers who went out to play AFL. Obviously, Mark O'Connor as well is in that group. But they're all outstanding players for their counties at underage level. And in O'Riordan's case, at senior level. If you remember, in 2014, he played that year. That was his first year in. Mm. Absolutely magnificent. He was an All-Star nominee, and his performance against Galway is a high-scoring match against Galway in a qualifier. He was magnificent from halfback. A year later, he was a pivotal part with Stephen O'Brien, a midfield pairing against that went to an All-Ireland Under-21 final. They lost to Tyrone in somewhat controversial circumstances, Tipperary.
I was at that game as well.
Yeah, I was too. It was in Parnell Park on a really wet night.
Ooh, nasty.
It was a nasty game. There was a residue after that. And after that, O'Riordan was gone. And when you think that they went to an All-Ireland semi-final the year later without O'Riordan, it was quite incredible. And Stephen O'Brien, who had gone to the Hurlers. So if you think of Tipperary in the context of how close they were that year, and they pushed Mayo. They were probably never going to beat them, but they pushed them. But you think of O'Rourke or O'Riordan driving that Tipperary team so much in those years. And to think that if he was there, I often wonder if O'Riordan and Stephen O'Brien were there, what difference...
Well, why wouldn't they start them, Cullum?
5 years out of the game, though, Kevin.
Look at McKenna for Tyrone. Sure, Jesus, he was back, and within 2 months, he was dominating training sessions.
Yeah, yeah. Colin O'Riordan is probably... He's back quite a few weeks, too. But I just think sometimes there's an order in these things that they don't want to upset the balance too much. They want to say, well, there's our starting team. And this is an option, and they're not just going to push everything aside. I don't think that's the dynamic in a team, Kevin. That's not the way I would see it. I think differently, but I would say,
I think Colin does things too. Yeah, and I accept, and generally speaking, yes. But this here you've just described now a very, very special player, haven't you? Mm. A very, very special athlete, and there is this kind of unwritten rule for a manager. He's duty bound to put out his best team to give his team the best chance of winning. And I think while if he was a mid player, panelists might have an issue. I think when players see this improves my chance of winning a Munster medal or a Munster final, I think players can live with that when it is an obviously beneficial selection for his team. Now I take it, it's in the balance. My sense is, like, no point bringing him on now when there's 12 points down and 20 minutes to go.
No,
that scenario.
The other scenario, Kevin, is he drops the first three balls. Okay, he's a fantastic player. But just say things don't go well. What's the corrosive effect on the rest of the players at that point? It is a risk, given how good he is. And that's accepted, I think, is a risk. But if he comes in and makes those mistakes when he comes in, I think that's more tolerable. It has less impact on the rest of the team. I'd just be conscious of that impact on the team, that if you push everything, if Colin O'Riordan starts on Sunday, it's the biggest story of the day, and all the focus is on that. Yeah. And it somehow doesn't go well.
He's a professional footballer, though. You know, they can handle much better than us mere amateurs. They can handle these sort of big expectations and demands. I fully take your point, Colin.
But is the gap that great between the professional and amateur athlete? I don't believe it is, because after, you know, Conor McKenna was certainly superb in the two league games, especially the game against Mayo. But against Donegal, he wasn't as prominent. He just was not as prominent. And even Mark Keane struggled in that game against Kerry for a long, long time. Yeah. I can't remember too many plays he made. He certainly delivered one pass. And he made a mark, but it was a free out against him for a nudge.
The push,
Say Kevin that Colin O'Riordan hadn't gone to Australia, but instead, like Stephen O'Brien, he'd gone to play for the Hurlers for 5 years. You know, he had the football pedigree, nobody questioned it, and he came back into the panel. Do you think you would be as likely to start him then, or do you think is it the AFL the professional aspect to his status that you think means he should be thrown in there.
It's the AFL aspect that's the one I'd be, and the argument is there really much of a difference? You'd have to say there probably is, Colm, really, lads. I would say so, that, you know, the professional game is, you know, the number one rule, there's always another game. There's always next week. They're playing week in, week out at high level, high intensity, high prep, working every hour on their skill sets, on their conditioning. I think it is the mental aspect of the transition is no issue for these professional players. No issue. Sure, they couldn't make it professionally in Australia if they were anyway fragile in that department. And you can imagine playing against those guys down in Australia, the natives. I mean, they would test your fragility very, very quickly. It'll be about the football. And you've balanced it well, Colm, in that that's what young Power has to be thinking about when he sits down to pick the team. Yeah, the disaster would be if he selected him and he made a hames of it, you know, and that he was dropping balls and just couldn't get going. Just if he stuck one in, like, I'll flip the coin. Suppose he sticks it in the back of the net in the first 5 minutes. No disaster now. No,
they're off.
No,
then. They're off then. But that's the risk.
That's the dilemma.
That's the balance.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a delicate one. And I'm sure David Power is thinking, well, I have other guys here. And they do think of that. They must think
and
he's manager next year and somebody is displaced and put down. That's human nature, whether it's Colin O'Reilly or not. Even though I'm pretty sure they're all very, very happy. And he has been with them. He was up in the league matchup up in Leitrim. He has been very, very much with them all the way. So he is a very integral part of it. But there is just a risk there. Sometimes the balance of that is, let's put him in after 20 or 25 minutes. And the game could still be very much in
the balance. Yeah. Can I just ask, lads, because I haven't read it, the Stephen O'Brien update column, is he up and running?
I'm not sure about that, Kevin. Whether he is or not. Now,
there's doubts about himself and name, Kennedy. But I hadn't heard anything definitive. I did read that in the Echo, where I also read an interesting piece by Dennis Hurley, Rory, where I thought it was good. Against Kerry, Cork used 9 of their 11 subs. There was a goalkeeper and one other sub who didn't get in, and Dennis was making the point that, usually, if Cork beat Kerry, now allowing for extra time, etc., they're relying on a core of 17 or 18.
Oh, he's been in the panel.
Yeah, there's strength and depth there to Cork, isn't there?
Big time. And you, like, somebody that I would have huge time for and was an integral part to the under-20 victory last year, was a young lad from Mitchelstown called Cathal O'Mahony. And was he deemed a close contact or something which ruled him out of the Kerry game? But he's back in the mix in terms of the inside forwards. Really exciting player now, like still very young. But look, I don't see any reason why you couldn't throw him in there, certainly with 15, 20 minutes to go. Has all the skills, excellent free taker, brilliant from dead ball, and really good character as well. James Lockery to come back into the mix. I think he's possibly fit. I think Tom Clancy from Clonakilty is gone for the season, but there was rumours that he might have been able to get back. But it'll give you an indication. Now, they're still lacking, what I would say, is that absolute 9 out of 10 forward. You know, that really, really, like, unmarkable forward. They've got a lot of, you know, good forwards, but they've, you know, like a Con O'Callaghan or it's just this danger player that like, everybody would kind of make you...
It's desperately unlucky. It's desperately unlucky that Sheehan isn't.
Well, there you go, Kev. You know, like in terms of having somebody even on the edge of the square, and just in terms of leadership, and in terms of his just experience that he would bring. But go back to your point earlier, for Cork to lose this match would be nothing short of an unmitigated disaster. I think in a lot of ways, what would probably suit them is an old horrible scrape over the line 1-point win, because I think what will probably end up happening irregardless is they'll go into the semi-final should they get over Tipperary pretty, you know, they'll be heavy underdogs going into the semi-final at that stage. But what would be unthinkable is if they were to have done the hard work by beating Kerry and then get knocked out by Tip. But make no mistake about it, Tipperary will not be coming into this game not lacking in belief. Like they have had plenty of battles with Cork down through the divisions and in championship, And the fact that Tipperary are facing into a Munster final with a chance to win a Munster medal, it's going to be that there'll probably be an extra little bit of emotion flowing around for them as well, given the fact they're not going to be wearing their traditional jerseys and given the weekend that's in it. So I'd expect them to sort of certainly up it from right from the off. One caveat from their point of view, I don't know if any of you got a chance to watch their game against Limerick. They were dreadful in the first half.
Dreadful. I saw it, yeah.
Dreadful. I mean, absolutely appalling in the first half.
Lucky now, to get out. Lucky to even get out of there. Yeah.
Really lucky to beat Limerick.
Connor Sweeney had a
point. If you think of Connor Sweeney's point, but the pressure he was under to kick that and to convert that from the sideline, and you look at the end of the Mayo Galway game, and Shane Walsh had a similar situation. It was really brave of Connor Sweeney to go.
It was a great shot.
But to come back to the original question, Mikey, just in terms of the depth. I would 100% endorse that. And I think what you're probably going to see, certainly with team selection, is I'd say he's going to shift it around again. I'd actually nearly expect Luke Connolly to start this time as opposed to coming in off the bench, because I think, you know, it'll probably be a looser game, which will probably suit him a little bit better. Mm. And they are building a panel and there's more players coming. I think Kieran Shannon wrote a great piece last week. In that, I think Cork will be right back in there now to compete, possibly for the next 7 or 8 years. Like, they're not going to win the All-Ireland this year, let's be honest. But, like, and the chances are they won't even get past the semi-final. But I think they're building a good culture there, whereby I think they're going to be back competitive in the top eight and further on, I think, for the next 5, 6, 7 years.
I'd agree with that.
Just looking at Rory, you mentioned about the players, the sheer turnover of players on Ronan McCarthy's watch alone. I mean, in league and championship, he has used so many players. I think in 3 seasons at this stage, and, you know, they've missed games against Longford at the end of the league. But they've used up to nearly, he's put nearly 60 players in competitive games through his hands. It's been an amazing turnover. He's gone a long way to really search for an optimum team here. A lot of players have got exposure, but I think they look like they're getting there. They look like they're really sorting out their squad and Laidmore Championship debut the last day.
And a big win column. I had that similar experience with Ross, that you're just going through players a lot because you're not winning, so players mightn't hang around. If you're not winning, you're changing because you're trying to get the right mix. But then when you get a big win, you say, okay, I must have something here. I must have 10, 11, 12 I can nail down next Sunday again and see, can I, the two or three issues, can I tidy them up? And the big win against Kerry, surely. I think he has room to mix it up with one or two selections, but surely it will be a pretty consistent selection, not only for the end of 2020, but as Rory, the point he's making, and Kieran Shannon, which I agree with, is going forward now. He knows his core now. He knows his 20. He knows... Yeah. And then he'd get a few coming through all the time, as you do in Cork and these big counties, and then add to it. Yeah. So they've turned the corner, you know, from the decade of unforgivable depths that they got to. And I think they're heading into a good place.
You have to be very optimistic. Even last year, the two underage titles that they won, and they're winning this in an environment of total Kerry and Dublin dominance, whether that's at minor. Yeah. Or at under 20/21, as Dublin have managed over the last decade. So to squeeze in those two was really timely. And I think there's a lot of good structures have been put in place over the last few years in Cork that will drive a lot of players through now. And I think we'll see a lot more turnover in the years that follow. Some of these guys may not reach the pinnacle, but I think over the next decade, I would agree, I would think the county to watch in terms of closing a gap ultimately will be Cork.
Okay, we will come back and do predictions shortly, but I think after that, Rebel Lovin, I think we know where you're all leaning. We will move north to Armagh. And Colm, I want to start with you because...
hope it's going to be Armagh.
Well, this is the point. Isn't it a bit mental, Colm, that they're laying a new pitch in the athletic grounds that's going to be, I think it's in today, which will give it 2 days to bed in before an Ulster football final? It's not as if they're not short on stadiums in Ulster. This seems like an insane risk to be taken.
It does. Now, if this was the summertime and it was Croke Park, you'd lay part of a pitch and it would bed down pretty quickly. But I know Declan Bonner was very concerned about it earlier in the week, about the condition of the pitch. I'm not so sure how quickly these things will bed down at this time of year.
Oh, Cullum, sorry to interrupt. I've been heavily involved in a massive redevelopment in our club here where I'm living. Yeah. I can tell you for a fact, it takes about 12 months for any pitch to knit properly. Like you can't just lay a pitch on Wednesday and expect it to sort of bounce top of the ground by Sunday. It doesn't work like that.
But is there a plan B? There is. This is news to me. Did this news come out yesterday or something? Or
I
missed it. I was off the grid a bit yesterday. And what's the plan? What's the plan B, lads?
Well, plan B is Newry, as far as I'm aware. You know, plan B is Newry. I think so. Yeah. Because you have to go somewhere where there's lights.
Healy Park and Oma wouldn't be great to absorb any adverse weather. It hasn't. I mean, games have been taken out of there. If you recall earlier this year, the Kerry game was moved over to Eden Dock. Between, you know, obviously equidistant, Oma would be the prime venue for Donegal and Cavan, possibly Brewster Park in Enniskillen. But Armagh is the place of preference for the Ulster Council for a lot of these games.
But surely Enniskillen is a perfect. Isn't that half? Yeah, that's almost the middle ground, isn't
again,
it?
Again, can it take heavy rain that may fall over the weekend? That's
do they have lights?
Yes, they do. All the Ulster venues have every county in Ulster has lights. Obviously, with the exception at the moment of
Clonus, which would be the obvious. The 1:30 throw in. Yeah.
How does the stadium where you hold all your finals not have lights and every other one?
very simple in that the Ulster have obviously the project Casement Park project, and that is their end game, really, in terms of Ulster finals and bringing it back to Casement Park.
Kevin, Clonus exudes a radiance all of its own. It doesn't need floodlights. Kevin, Barry Cassidy's the referee. His ears must have been ringing after this, the press conference they held during the week, which went on for 3 hours, which is phenomenal going. The stamina of some of these press GAA journalists is really remarkable. We had Declan Bonner saying that Michael Murphy doesn't get enough protection, and we had Mickey Graham saying that the big counties get all the big decisions. So they were both. Barry Cassidy, I hope, went off the grid himself, like yourself, because he's getting the two managers are trying to communicate with him whether he wants to listen or not. Yeah.
And again, it's another. I'm laughing about the lights there. Again, you know, I'm ultra conservative, or maybe it's my military training, but I always, you know, when you have an opportunity, when you don't need to take a risk, don't take it. So you have an Ulster final, you don't need an Ulster referee in the middle of it. You know, go down and get one from Leinster, or get a new, what I call it, an absolute neutral. and they appoint one of their own lads to do it, which is fine. I mean, Cassidy's not a bad referee at all. But the idea that the boys have a 3-hour press conference to give them the necessary information is gas. You'll recall my last episode with a Northern referee where I intentionally threw a ball but accidentally hit the ref. Believe it or not, one of the massive frustrations of doing that was that Michael Murphy had come out with a ball and just flung our centre back clean out of the way, and he let play go on. It was an absolute nail down free to us, and you know, there wasn't much in it at the time. I was boiling with temper at that stage, but anyway, look, the idea that now Michael needs protection, I'd say he's well able to look after himself. I might say, what about the poor old corner forwards?
Last year it was Ryan McHugh who wasn't getting protection, Bonner put that out as well, but that. I tend to agree. Michael Murphy probably doesn't get the number of frees that he should get. And neither does Aidan O'Shea, and neither did Kieran Donaghy. And obviously the common denominator is they're all big fellas.
Yeah.
And that's the curse of the big man on the football field, is that a referee will think, you know, naturally enough, he'll say, oh, these guys, they let's give it a
minute. Well able to take it. Well able
and it happens. And I've seen it plenty of times. And this conversation was happening in 2013 and 2014. And in fact, I recall, after Jim McGuinness, after the Laois game, the qualifier they won in 2013, Jim McGuinness hit out at his players not being protected. That was after the 2013 Ulster final. Mark McHugh had come away with a bad injury that day. So after the, if you recall, after the Laois game, and James Horn's response in the build-up to the 2013 All-Ireland quarter-final was, well, have you ever been hit by Michael Murphy? And that's, you know, he is well able to deliver it. I mean, is there a more physical, stronger player out there? There aren't many, if there are. And I think if you remember that shuddering collision between Conor McKenna,
the professional
and the amateur, where was the physical? Where was the difference there between an amateur and a pro? There wasn't.
And Michael is also sometimes a little recklessly. Michael can up the stakes more than he needs to sometimes when he goes into the tackle and picks up a lot of kind of fouls where he wants to lay down a marker about how physical he and his team want to be sometimes. And I don't say that in any negative way about Michael Murphy. I'm a huge, huge fan. But look, that's all nonsense that was going on during the week. looking for protecting. You know, in fact, it's not a game, as far as I'm aware, and I played against Cavan a few times with my own team. That's not a kind of a game that Cavan go in. They're not able to go in for that sort of a game.
They've no specimens on the same level as Michael Murphy, anyway.
No, not that I like. You'd hardly see Gareth McKiernan now going after him, would you? Really? So they'll want to keep things moving and keep playing as much football as possible.
Rory, I suppose the thing about Cavan this year has been miraculous escapes. They've had a couple already. You can nearly throw the Antrim game in there because they nearly managed to throw that one away as well. And they're clearly a very fine football team. They're just struggling to put 70 minutes together, aren't they?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of doom and gloom surrounding them because they got relegated from Division 2 and they're down into Division 3. And here they are a kick of a ball away from an All-Ireland semi-final. Well, more than a kick of a ball, really, given the task that faces them. I think they deserve a lot of credit, to be fair, to get where they are, given that they were up against it. They probably weren't given much of a chance against Monaghan the first day out, given the form lines going into it. And nobody probably would have predicted them to come out on this side of the draw. I think, though, the pleasure dome is over for them, unfortunately, and that's they're going to probably experience a very different type of challenge wherever this match is played on Sunday. And while I think they'll definitely take something from it, will they get the kind of hiding that they got in last year's Ulster final? Maybe not. It's more difficult for teams to dish out the kinds of beatings that they can do in the summer, in winter, because just the ball is moving slower. The conditions make it just even it out a small bit more. But it's like if we remember back to the Ulster final of 2019, I know it played in high summer, a lot better weather and all of that type of stuff, but the game was over at halftime. Like, and I mean completely over. Like, you know, there was no chance of them coming back. Like, and Donegal did something similar to Armagh in the previous round. Donegal are ruthless. You know, they're not messing around, Donegal. Like, they are very serious about this year. I give Donegal a big, big chance in this competition, not just in Ulster, but beyond. And, I think it's the end of the road for Cavan one way or the other come Sunday, 6 o'clock.
We've been talking a lot about Michael Murphy, Kevin, but a couple of people were making the point after the Armagh game. He was actually kind of peripheral to matters at the weekend, and that would have pleased him no end, I'd say, because he's carried enough Donegal performances in his time that he's obviously their talisman and he is their leader on the field. But in terms of the actual play, he wasn't the be all and end all of that game, and he wasn't the winning and losing of it. There is a team developing around him there now, a serious team.
Yeah. I think he scored his first score in the championship against Armagh. I think it might have been a free. I'm not even sure about that. But yeah, I'm sure about that. It was his first score. I just can't recall now, was it a free or a play? But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Yeah, he's definitely having. He's not. If you're doing the, you know, how many touches do you get in your play map? He wouldn't be on the ball constantly, but he is still setting the tone, Mikey. And also, when it comes to big games, and you know, Ulster final is obviously your passport into the All-Ireland series, very much so this year because there ain't no second chance. For the big, big matches, Michael Murphy always shows up. Always shows up. I mean, I can recall last year's game against Mayo down in Castlebar. And, you know, ultimately, they were defeated. But my God, single-handedly did he put on a show. Like, he took this to the whole Mayo team, whichever way they wanted it. physically, football, everywhere. He did everything. Now, those lads have definitely come on. You know that yourself. You're watching it. Langan, McFadden, the forward line now, Morgan, you know, all these guys. Jamie Brennan has been a revelation to me this year.
They're quite big and physically athletic as well, aren't they, Kev? And I think very that's going to be important down the line.
And you mightn't see them at their full power this winter, but again, as they develop, because they're a very young team, tall, athletic, very composed on the ball, very high skill set, and certainly excellent teamwork. Now, if you just look, lads, at the Super 8s last year, the Mayo effort, the Kerry effort. Do you remember the didn't the draw with them? Was that last year or the year before? No, it was last year. In
drew with Kerry last year. Yeah. Great game.
You look at the league against Dublin this year. They drove that league match for a long, long time, and then Dublin got their stuff together. And I think it was a 1-point win or a 2-point win for Dublin in the end. Very, very tight match. They know they can live with these top teams. They absolutely know it. Sunday to me is only one result, because they are All-Ireland. Again, it'd be a bit like what we're talking about. This would be if Donegal were to take their eye off the ball and get beaten in Ulster, as often happens in Ulster with, you know, the underdog somehow. And they have the perfect template if they were to go use the Cork one. But they don't have the material to even execute that template, I don't believe. Like, ultimately, and I'll finish with this on the Cavan side, Mikey. Ultimately, Cavan were well beaten by a Roscommon B team in a very important league match towards the end. They're in Division 3 for a reason. You know, that old cliche of the league not lying and so on. They have done incredibly well to get to the Ulster final. But they're boxing way beyond their weight division, is my view. And fair play to them. Fair play to them to take out Monaghan and to take out Armagh, who I fancied would beat them. The big win for them was the Monaghan one. I had no sense that they'd take out Monaghan. And fair play to them. But the journey is over. The pitch and the conditions will even it up a bit, and it'll get a bit tighter. Everything will tighten. But I absolutely couldn't see it ending up well for them.
No, speaking of punching above your weight, we'll come on to your own county now very briefly, Colin, because Anthony Daly is waiting to come in and talk about hurling. 12 goals in two matches, Colin. You must be, you know, dancing into this Leinster final full of confidence.
I'd always be concerned when a team racks up almost as many goals as points in games. You know, there is that that games can just take on lives of their own and take off. Having said that, some of the goals last week against Kildare were well constructed. I thought the first goal in particular, a ball over the top, I think it was Jordan Morris, one of the new players, putting into the path of another new player, Matthew Costello, who I think is more left-footed. I'm nearly sure he's more left-footed, but you wouldn't have thought that with the way he dispatched it off.
It was a great finish.
Thought he would have been a forward. He would play club football as a forward, but he has been selected for the last two games at left half-back, and so far it has worked well. I mentioned about Cork and the number of players they have strove to find to get a settled squad. Well, you can probably go above that for Andy McEntee with the number of players and the sheer turnover. I think
he's gone through 60 goalkeepers, I think, at this stage.
Well, I think it's around 10 goalkeepers.
11, the dealer said last week.
Was it 11? I would have 11. Had it at 10, maybe 11 there, but certainly, since Paddy O'Rourke left, there has been quite a turnover of keepers. So if we include, maybe it's 11, I thought it was 10. And it's something actually Cork have had as well. Mm. Cork have had a number of different keepers in as well. So there's very similar pathways there between Meath and Cork. They've both been down for a long, long time. They're both in provinces beside Giants, albeit Cork have made up that gap quicker. But I go back to the turnover and where Meath are to where they were. Andy McEntee's first competitive game was in the 2017, the first round of the league, and they lost to Kildare by 10 points. In the championship, his second game was a Leinster semi-final, a really warm day down in Tullamore, and they lost that by something similar. I think it was around 10 points. at the end of that season, I think about 15, 16, something like that player, were either left or there were long-term injuries, but there was a huge turnover. So if you take the context of those two Kildare defeats in his first year, and you look at the game last Sunday and the league game that they played, it effectively got them promotion to Division 1 last year in Navan. You know, if you use Kildare as the benchmark, Meath have certainly improved over the last 4 years. And I think he's getting a lot out of the squad. Meath wouldn't be imbued with huge talent. They certainly, like Cork, there's no real absolute standout that you'd say, yes, this is the player. I think, look, Donal Keoghan has been a superb player over the last decade in really troubled times. But they're mobile, they're quick, they're not hugely physical, obviously, and against Dublin, that's going to cost them, their lack of physical power. But they are quick, a lot of pace there, a lot of mobility, but obviously football and physicality will fall down against a team like Dublin. And, you know, if you're looking for a benchmark, I think if they get it within inside single figures defeat here, I think people would look at that as pretty reasonable. Progress.
Yeah,
you well, last year was appalling, wasn't it? Last year's result was appalling.
Well, it was 4 points last year. Now, albeit they missed a lot of bad frees, it wasn't a great day. I mean, obviously, Saturday night may not be great either. It wasn't a great day. And that game was, it never really took off.
Yeah. Cullum, really last night, I'll steal your thunder a little bit, Rory, here, but
no problem.
He was sending me down some stuff. And this stat emerged. You know the one you were texting me? The 18%. Yeah. I never said
it's incredible. I asked Johnny, by the way, and it is a record.
It is.
It's
I record. Thought it would be. It had to be. Yeah. Cullum, Meath last year got four scores from, I can't just quite remember, maybe 22, yeah. 18% accuracy. It's the lowest ever.
It was really bad. I mean, some of the free, falling. If I recall, last year was just, I wasn't actually at that game, but I remember watching back and it was hedging, you know, it was.
But can I throw this across your analysis of Meath? And I agree with a lot of it. The only kind of, oh God, Junior, I'm not so sure about this moment I'd have is, and the benchmark against Kildare is excellent, but their first half against Kildare last Sunday was appalling, close to nearly appalling again.
Really poor.
And that would worry you.
Kildare left a lot of scores out there. But Derek Irwin, who's a really, really good player and takes some lovely scores off his left foot, left a couple out there, as you know, and they did. And I would agree with that. That first half was terrible. And as I said, you'd always have a concern about a team racking up goals. I mean, they still only scored 9 points. Now, you know, overall, a reflection of any team would be, you know, if you get up to the 13, 14 points, you're really in that game. Now, maybe some of those goal chances should have been, and they needed to go after it, and they needed to really up the pace, and they did just straight after halftime. And I think the first two goals particularly were very well taken, After that, it became a bit ragged on Kildare's behalf. But I take that. They weren't and even 7-14 against Wicklow, it's a bit of an imbalance, but
your optimism is tempered. Then
there is a frenzy in them that they can go and chase after goals and get them quite evident. Yeah. But okay. I think if they get one against Dublin, that'll be a return.
Okay, Rory, make it quick. Whatever this point is.
Yeah, I will make it quick. I just think there's just one small little kind of olive branch maybe that they could cling to is that the fact that I think if this championship had been played when it was supposed to, I think Meath might have gone into it, you know, in a very different mindset to the way they're going into Saturday night's game. The fact that they resumed the league after the lockdown, they actually had a couple of encouraging results. They ran Dublin reasonably close in Parnell Park, and they got a draw with Monaghan. And I think their confidence might be that little bit better than what it would have ordinarily been had this match been played in the summer. Is it going to be enough to bridge the gap to Dublin? Not a hope.
I mean, What fascinates me about Dublin is Kilkenny and Fenton once again just setting the temperature. I mean, as an axis, and obviously Cluxton is you know, he's the anchor for this Dublin team, and James McCarthy more and more is just his consistency. But the guys that set the temperature, Fenton and Kilkenny comes out with 1-4. after scoring 5 points against
one thing though, Cullum. The one thing that I would love to see Meath do, and it's the one thing that kind of bugs me with a lot of the Leinster counties. I actually had this conversation with Eamon Fitzmaurice last week before the live show, and he said, Rory, trust me, people have tried that as well. But I do get the sense with an awful lot of teams, they just stand back and admire them. There's almost like, you know, oh look, aren't they great? Like, you're at absolutely nothing if you don't get stuck into them at the very, very least, you know? And, like, at least make Dublin wake up on Sunday morning, feel a little bit sore as if they were in a championship match. And if they can't achieve that, yeah. I mean, if you stand back and you admire them, they're going to play the silky football and absolutely
What if Brian Minton... Sorry now, Mikey, I know you're getting panicking here now time-wise, but what if Brian Minton said, okay, I'm going after Fenton. I'm going to, man to man. And what if Keoghan said, or their manager said, put him in on Kilkenny.
And They are absolutely the two matchups. Yeah. If you're going out, I mean, you think back to the 2017 All-Ireland final and Lee Keegan went out.
Correct. That's my point.
He went after Kilkenny. And if you're talking about possessions and touches, Kilkenny had one of his lowest. It was still probably around 18 or 20, but his impact probably wasn't as good as other All-Ireland finals because Keegan was on him. Keoghan's a very, very good man marker. He actually picked him up in the league match recently. Now, Kilkenny did get away, as he would, but he did reasonably pretty well on him. He's a good man marker. He started off his time as cornerback, but then was released to halfback. He's very good to carry
very
the ball.
Very pacey, yeah.
But I would say, yes, you're right. They're two very senior players in Meath.
Okay, well, look, let's see if they can derail the 10 in a row bid, because Celtic's 10 in a row bid's looking a bit shaky there, but I looked into it this morning. They have a bit of a way to go to catch Skonto. Skonto in Latvia managed 14 league titles in a row, and so did the Lincoln Red Imps in Gibraltar.
You were a sad person.
There's two competitions that all love as much as the Leinster Championship.
What was Ballina's record?
In the club championship.
Yeah, didn't they go
17 or something, I think.
17, yeah.
I think Cross of McLean would have probably bet that nearly or something. One of them, 18, no? Did they? I don't know.
Anyway, look forward to it. Kevin, we'll let you go now. Thank you very much. And
okay, lads.
Enjoy the games of the weekend and we'll chat to you again.
Look forward to it. See you, fellas.
See you on the weekend, Kevin.
Yeah, God bless.
He hits it. It's over the bar.
Welcome back. We've been joined by Anthony Daly. How are you doing, Anthony?
Great, Mikey. How are you?
Good.
Hey, Rory.
We're good. We spent a lot of time talking about Leinster Football Championship there now, so we're just going to cleanse ourselves now. A little bit of
Knee Mac.
Yeah.
You talked about Dublin for a good while, so...
Well, more about Meath, actually, in fairness.
Yeah. Yeah.
We won't go back there again. We've two All-Ireland quarterfinals to look forward to. And I suppose when we were mapping out this championship with its small back door, we probably did we see Tipperary here or not? And is this a slight on Liam Sheedy's, you know, All Ireland defence that they're here, or do you just have to accept that Limerick and Munster at the moment are a very difficult beast to tame?
Yeah, Mikey, I think once we got the new draw and you had Clare, Limerick and the winners meeting Tip with a game under their belt, and obviously Limerick were going to be favourites for that first match. So I certainly felt going to Cork to do that match that Limerick were firm favourites, having seen them in the flesh in Turles. So I did think that Tipperary had possibly gambled in their preparation in terms of, I think they only played Antrim and Offaly in two challenge matches, like, whereas we heard about an awful lot of high-profile challenge matches going on around the country. So... I think he gambled a bit. I think it backfired a bit. I think Limerick were much stronger, even though the conditions were terrible for everybody. So, no real surprise, but of course, no real surprise either then with a Liam Sheedy trained team that the bounce back came. And I felt that Cork dominated them for long, long periods of the game the last day. And obviously, Cork's confidence was back up again after the win against Dublin. And even after Jason Ford's goal, Cork responded brilliantly and went ahead. But I mean, it was a great sign at Tip. I thought coming down the stretch, they really flexed the muscles, they flexed the bench, especially Willie Connors. I thought, massive impact. And obviously, the Jake Morris goal killed it off then. So Yeah, no real surprise, Mike. More of a surprise maybe Galway after watching them against Wexford. I suppose most people who thought that they'd be winning Leinster, but of course they were catnapped, or whatever you want to call it, coming down the stretch as well. So a lot of stung people here. It'll be just interesting to see our tip now on the up and up. Are Galway stung? Are they, you know, reeling from the Kilkenny thing? So I'm really looking forward to it. I think these two have served up epics. If you take the league final out of it.
Oh my God, yeah. No, they really 17, have.
Every single game has been absolutely brilliant. Like, so
I had a quick look at it this morning. I was kind of thinking, is there something eating Tipperary in terms of like, because it does seem tactically most counties are moving towards as many long distance points as possible, and goals are more of a luxury item than something that's being sought, which is a bit of a change. So I was looking to see if Tipperary, who we would have seen as a more goal hungry team, are down as well. But actually, they're scoring 2 goals a game, which is exactly what they scored last year. They got 1 against Wexford in the semi-final and 3 against Kilkenny. Up to that, they've got exactly 2 goals every game, and they're doing the same this year. So you can't say that that's it. Is there something that they're struggling at, or do you actually think they're operating on a similar level to last year? Because it wouldn't seem.
Well, no, I think they haven't found last year's form yet. But I mean, remember last year they didn't find that form either until late in the year. So they really didn't find it until the semi-final. So yeah, but this is do or die, and Liam would know that, and Tommy and Eamon O'Shea and Darry Egan and Kelly. But look, the big thing for me is, like we say, that the two McGraths really haven't hit top throttle yet. Now, is that down to a long, tough, seriously tough club campaign with Loughmore, both in hurling and football? Let's face it, they had heartbreak in both finals. Imagine if John McGrath can find the notches again now this weekend to add to Shamey. I thought in the second half against Cork, really, what a goal from Jason Ford, lads. We don't associate Jason with scoring goals like that, really. You know, he's more of a sniper. Brilliantly accurate player, but I mean, he really took on the play there that time. Went at John O'Donoghue, got inside and buried it. And so, look, Niall O'Mara going back to wing back, that kind of worked. But now we believe that they have a full, clean bill of health, so Shane Kennedy could come into play. A lot of positives, like Michael Breen's performance and Dan McCormack's performance, I think, were huge positives. And lads, the big thing for me here, Mike, is they go back to Limerick again, where Galway come back from 2 games in Croke Park, and lads, it's really like chalk and cheese.
Yeah.
And huge credit to Limerick. Limerick's still in great condition. So is Thurles, and they're really natural soil, but there's no comparison to Croke Park.
Let's they're not relaying it like they are in Armagh, but it's a lot heavier pitch than Croke Park, isn't it? It will be very difficult for Galway to kind of make the alterations.
Well, I'd say, Mike, they're up in Loch George this week on the worst pitch they can find, trying to get used to the ball not bouncing into their hands. Look, it's tighter, it's slightly smaller, it'll be more of a battle. Galway will face different sort of enemies than they'd faced the last 2 days out.
Yeah, that's to come on to Galway, Colm, they must be slightly scrambled, I'd say, by last weekend. They had the better of it, but as so often with Kilkenny, you know, 2 goals in a matter of minutes and the match has turned on its head, and the momentum has gone a little bit because they toppled Wexford so impressively. They didn't play badly on Saturday night, but at the same time, they still lost the game, and that's now they have to play the All-Ireland champions, and the whole thing could be over in a matter of 6 days.
Psychologically, it's always difficult for any team that loses the way they lost it. If you go out and perform badly, as they didn't, You cannot wait for that next qualifier game for some atonement. This is different for Galway. They know they really left it behind. And psychologically, that's very, very hard this week. And, you know, it has to be in their mind that they're back down at the very bottom again. You know, if you think that they could have been sitting pretty in an All-Ireland semi-final, now they're facing, you know, a second game, second successive weekend. And they're thinking, if we are to get to an All-Ireland final, we got to go through 3 weeks running. And it goes back to the way it was.
Tip Limerick and Kilkenny. That'll be their pathway, yes, most likely. Pathway. You know what I mean?
You know, in the round robin series in the first year, it was the third weekend that was catching out teams. And so far, and it's obviously early yet, but Cork went 3 weekends and lost. Dublin went 3 weekends and lost. Now, maybe there's nothing in this, but it looks like in these conditions, and you know, Anthony mentioned Limerick, and Croke Park is playing like it's summer. you know, the movement of the ball. Obviously, there's wind and there's different temperatures there, but the actual surface, the ball is really, really hopping off the surface. Like, you know, it's there's little difference there, but except even in Thurles, you know, there was a lot of rucks around there last Sunday evening, and ball was getting clogged up. Now, that was probably as much numbers as anything, but the surface is for sure an issue, and Tipperary have that. But Galway won't be making too many changes, I don't think. I can't see that. And really, they should have been out of sight. Had Niall Burke not been held back by Hugh Lawler for that particular incident, and had he scored that goal, you know, they really, really could have got away from Kilkenny. But fantastic for Kilkenny to come back. But definitely, I think it's a different mindset to go into a game 7 days later, having left one behind rather than not having performed. That's completely different.
But Cullum, just on changes, like, you definitely expect David Burke maybe would start, like, after his contribution.
Aidan
Hart came on. I thought he made a difference. So I'd say Jason Flynn might start too, you know.
Yeah, Jason might probably start. Yeah.
Yeah. So be interested to see what he goes for there.
May not stay. Obviously, he was taken off at halftime the last day, having played well against Wexford.
Yeah.
Yeah, Anthony, considering we're talking about the conditions and it's going to be a slog, they're probably the two strongest panels. I don't think Kilkenny could have any argument that Galway and Kilkenny have more players to call on a match day than even they do. Or you could even argue Limerick, that the strength and depth that both have displayed thus far this year is quite incredible, isn't it?
It is. I still think Limerick probably, you know, when you see someone we haven't seen maybe in 2 years, Adrian Breen, being sprung the last day, Limerick just have some amount of riches. But these two definitely, when you hear Liam Sheedy announcing he's a full clean bill of health, and you consider they won last year's 20, the previous year's 21, and we're not seeing an awful lot of these guys featuring. So there's huge depth there. And again, with Galway, you know, little things. I mean, we all saw how fantastic Dathi Burke was on his reintroduction to hurling, if you like, since going off injured in the county final. And yet Richie Hogan caused him a whole different set of problems when he came on him. So I'm sure Liam will have studied the video on that, and Kilkenny's movement to create the two goals and the way they finished with a couple of points. So it'll be interesting. The likes of Fintan Burke, Shane Cooney, they've been big throw-ins from Thomas's as well, I'd feel, you know. And then this whole thing with Pádraig Mannion, played midfield against Wexford, really with license to shove up the field, I think got a couple of points. And the last day sort of acted as a sweeper, and very comfortable at doing it as well. And obviously we know from past that Aidan Hart is very good at doing the sweeper as well. So it'll be interesting to see would they stick or twist with Pádraig Mannion. Would they just slot him back into wing back and let him play his natural game? You know, possibly lining up against who, maybe, you know, Jason Ford, Shamey Callan could be out. I don't see him going with Shamey Callan in top of Dathi Burke. So I'd say Shamey could be out in the corner, out in the wing. You could have Jake Morrison side full forward on Dathi Burke for all the world.
Yeah, you could see them going for the slightly smaller, more mobile man, even in Limerick, yeah.
There's no point unless you have Richie Hogan's wrist hitting it in and high, as we saw. I mean, what a goal, lads. Jeez.
Yeah.
You know, the stuff we stayed up, our mothers let us stay up late to watch Match of the Day for goals like that. Like, you know, magic. And I think, you know, again, Anna Murphy's confidence will be rocked a little bit. You know, very good keeper now, and was the touted guy coming through in Galway to take over from Calna and Scahill, and deservedly into goal. But it's a tough place. You lose the Leinster final, you know you came off your line when you probably shouldn't have. And very lucky again, just shortly afterwards when Richie Hogan skimmed the crossbar when Anna was out again. So he'll be feeling it a bit this week, and he'll be liking to get his hands on a couple of balls early and do positive things with them.
Yeah. Rory, how do you know him quite well, obviously, Liam Sheedy. Kind of, there won't be a lot of training or coaching going on the last couple of weeks because it's game to game to game. So how do you see kind of just, it's a matter of just kind of keeping the boat on course, I guess, really, isn't it? And just kind of, it's more man management than coaching at this stage, isn't it?
Big time. Big time man management, and no better Buchel. I mean, Dalo, you know Liam as well. I think for a man to get inside somebody's head, I'd say there's nobody better, you know. I think they won't be found wanting for a personal motivation and collective motivation going into this. And I think he'll have them primed. I just go to it, not to keep going on about the subject, but I do think it's a shame that this match isn't being played in Croke Park, because to go back to something that Dalo referenced earlier on, style, like there's an old saying in boxing that styles make fights. And for whatever reason, these two, whenever they come up against each other, they just always produce absolute ding-dongs. I mean, they're classics nearly always. You think of the Joe Canning from under the Hogan or the Cusick stand in the famous semi-final. You think of Lark Corbett late on. Like, there's so many games between these two that are absolutely classics. I think there's two shames with it. Number one, that it's such an early throw-in on a Saturday. That can't be helped, unfortunately. Look, that's the schedule. And the second thing is, I think it would have probably been a more appropriate setting and a more appropriate stage had these two recent All-Ireland champions, because you're talking the defending champions against the 2017 champions. So I think Croke Park would have been in a more appropriate setting, and I think we probably would have got a better game of hurling as a result. I think there's nothing in it, and I would not be surprised to see extra time in this one. I think Galway probably have a longer way to come back. I think Tipperary would probably get a huge boost. As much as maybe Cork's challenge petered out towards the back end and was all too predictable again from Cork, I think definitely Tip will draw a huge amount of oxygen from that. And I think no better boy than Liam Sheedy to sort of show that they're still in this. They are still going to fight tooth and nail for this. And like I think, I don't know, Dalo, was the TJ Ryan on your podcast said that this one's like, did he referenced something being like a deaf dog? Hard to call.
This week's classic was Donny Ryan, too old, too slow, too four. Yeah, unreal. But no, yeah, I think you're right. And I wouldn't like think about the backroom staff as well, lads, with Tip as well. And I'm not knocking the Galway one. But Eamon O'Shea, Tommy Dunn, you know, Darry Egan, Owen Kelly, like they'll put a lot of thought into, you know, coming up with some strategy, Mike, that will upset Galway. And this is the game that's, I know, obviously being a Clare man, I'd be looking forward to the one after us as well. Yeah. But, no, great stuff to look forward to again, like every week at this stage.
Yeah. I was looking back at the three games earlier this week, and you mentioned how close it is and how tight. And I find this amazing for hurling. If you take the three matches, 2015, 16 and 17 as a package, the biggest gap there was between the teams in those games at any stage was 4 points. And that was at the very start of the 2015, 5 or 10 minutes into the 2015 game. Tip were 4 ahead. After that, so you're talking more than 210 minutes of hurling, if you include the added time and all of that. No more than 3 points separated these teams. And on 28 occasions, they were level. So you either had 1 point, 2 points, or sometimes 3 points, but more often than not, they were level. I mean, you think of games of hurling that can take off and a team can lead by 8 or 10 points and the other team will come back, and that's the range. But between these two, Tip and Galway, and this, if we like to call it the trilogy, between those, only 3 points for most of it has divided them. And I think we're looking at something similar here. Obviously, the game in Thurles in 2014 went one way, Galway's way, and then the other back in 2014 when they played in the qualifier. But those three games on current form, it can only go that way.
We'll come back and we'll do our predictions at the end, which I said we do after the football, but we didn't. I think everyone kind of made it clear what way they were swaying. But here, I just say, Mike,
one thing to look out for will be, and it could be the clash of the season in one way, would be the Carl Barrett on Conor Whelan. There's two fellas playing out of their skin, two tough boys as well.
They won't spare the timber on each other, Dalo. No. Like.
No. That's a crude way of putting it there from any more end of
them. We'll move on to Clare and Waterford. And just before we do mention the match, Anthony, I just wanted to just ask you briefly about, it's not the first time, it's not the last time, but two of the men you soldiered alongside for a long time are at each other again very publicly. Not asking you to pick sides or wade in on it. We had Michael Dignan on last week talking about Brian Lowen and Davy Fitzgerald and how he thought it was sad. And he said how his own Offaly team, they got together when they were the Jubilee team last year. And he said, like, they're not in regular contact with each other, but he said once they get back together, they're together and like there's a bond there that they'll have forever. It must sadden you a bit that, you know, your former manager and a couple of the players just not that they don't get along, but they very publicly don't get along and they're kind of tearing strips off each other.
Yeah, I don't lose any sleep, Mike. They're big lads. Funny enough, you mentioned that, Mike, and we spent the last two nights on Zoom calls with the whole squad and the organising committee because we were meant to be the 25-year team this year. And we don't even know if it's going ahead or not. And we're trying to book a hotel or cancel a hotel or look for our deposit back. So there's plenty of unity among those boys, let me reassure you. You know, the four corners between Jim McInerney and Tulla and Shawnee McMahon and Eamon Taff up in Tubber. We had every corner of the county on with us last night. So look, it's just something happened in a college's match and it festered a bit, I suppose. And look, the two lads have fallen out since, and there wasn't any shake hands after the match the other day. I presume it was a sweet one for Brian to win.
Yeah,
I presume Davey's staying on now in Wexford is to hope to meet Clare next year in some sense, put that right. So look, I suppose Gerardin is Gerard, you know, and writes the article. I guess he doesn't hold back. And of course, look, Davey feels the need to respond to that. So I don't get involved, to be honest.
I didn't expect you did, and I wasn't really asking.
I was thrilled for Brian because there was forces in Clare that didn't want him to get the job. You know, when he was appointed, he was literally told that they were offering it to somebody else, and he stuck in there, and the clubs got behind him and stood up and backed him, and he got the job. And he was having a great start to the job before the COVID hit.
Yeah,
really, they were top of their division in the league, and
it has to be remembered that he had as short a lead in as anyone could ever have as an inter-county manager because of all that to and fro. And so I'd say he had a battle on his hands getting in all the backroom team that he wanted. The league went well for him. And then the world was turned on his head. And then they got the start to the championship wasn't good either. So he's had a lot of challenges, hasn't he?
He has. He was lucky, I suppose, at the start that he...
Lost a load of players.
Seen him at, the two Galvins, you know, John Conlon. No, John Conlon's supposed to have trained for the last 2 weeks full on. So we might see the big number 14 at some stage now. It probably wearing number 24 or something. Yeah. But the talk around here is that he might be, you know, and there's a huge boost. I suppose Aaron Shanahan is okay again, I believe, after getting injured in the warm-up last week. And obviously David McInerney being available again. So, but he did. He got dealt a tough hand with, you know, John Conlon. Peter Duggan was the massive one, really. Yeah. And Podge as well, you know. So, but I'll tell you, the players really, you saw the players and their reaction against Wexford. They fought on their backs to win that game. So, the players, you saw Tony Kelly and himself embracing after the match and what it meant. And they would have soldiered together winning that Fitzgibbon with UL as well. So, yeah, I'd say it's fairly tight there this week now, I'd say. And there's a lot of buzz around the county, even though we're in lockdown, but you can feel it, you know, even turn on the local radio, you can feel the buzz.
Yeah, and Colm, the draw has, you could argue, being kind to Clare that they probably got the team they would have wanted. If we're talking about the two such recent All-Ireland winners on the other side of the draw, which we just discussed, Clare and Waterford are probably both quite happy with the draw that they got.
I would imagine so. I would think Waterford are equally happy that the direction they've taken there, because they'll come out of Thurles last Sunday evening feeling pretty good about themselves, having really contested it really well, and a lot of players stood up for them, no more than Stephen Bennett, who I thought was fantastic, not just for the long range frees, but just for some of the runs. He went very, very deep, even when he went out as a half forward. Carried the ball. Jack Prendergast, a player you mightn't have expected, but won a lot of frees for them. And, you know, they used Austin Gleeson in a free role, and he scored 3 points. And as always, with Austin Gleeson, you're left feeling, well, maybe there's some more in them. But I thought Waterford really, really set up well, and I thought their tenacity and everything about them. And you'd think, I say the opposite of what I said at Galway earlier, I think they'll come out of it pretty well. But obviously, they have the Tony Kelly factor to deal with. And, you know, everybody has had an opportunity to plan for him so far, but nobody has come up with a plan to stop him in the role that he's playing. I mean, have we ever seen 3 performances from one individual like it? I certainly can't remember. I can remember some great Tony Kelly performances in the past. And, you know, Pat O'Connor was talking about the end of the 2016 league replay when he scored points from either side of Thurles, off either side as well at the death to win that game. And I remember, and Anthony might remember this game against Thurles Sarsfields, the year they won the Clare the Clare county final. It was the week after they had won the county final, and Thurles were leading throughout. And obviously you'd say, right, Ballyhea will be happy to just win the county title and leave it at that. And the last 10 minutes of that game, I've never seen anything like what Tony Kelly did that day and that afternoon in Cusick Park. But here he comes again with the last three outings. They've just been phenomenal. I mean, it's been a joy to watch, really, to see his full array of skills off left and right, his running, his team play. He is everything. He's even greater to Clare what Michael Murphy, and we were discussing him earlier in the show, is to Donegal. He's even far exceeds that. As I don't think there has been a county who was more dependent on one player. It might be in the past, it might have been Murphy for influence and for leadership.
We were discussing as well, Anthony, Rory was saying, just Jesus, about Dublin, just get in their face, just, you know, get in Kieran Kilkenny's face, let him know he's in a game. Teams do that to Tony Kelly, and he wriggles off the hook. Like, can you have an explanation for it? He finds space on a hurling field that nobody else finds, doesn't he?
And this is the fascinating bit, Mike. He does this all the time for Ballyhea, Cullum, and that's why you wouldn't see it. I'd see it the whole time, you know, at club games. I mean, he is just incredible. Like, talk about reeling off three for Ballyhea. He's often reeled off six for Ballyhea, like in the championship in a row, of these type of scores and massive contributions. What's fascinating for me is the last 3 or 4 years, when people have maybe slightly questioned him, we've seen so much of him, you know, taking short puck outs off the keeper, taking balls off the corner back, you know. This year, he has been elusive and has been wandering in a free roll, but it's all been inside his own 65, if you like. And great credit to Brian and to Ken Ralph and James Moore and Sean Tracy for whatever way they're allowing him to do that. But we've not seen him taking any... No, look, the points from the sideline were outrageous, but they're not 90 yards back the field, you know. And I've seen him nailing these ones for Ballyhea regularly. So, yeah, I mean, look, Davey put Matt O'Hanlon on him, who has been his go-to guy for Joe Kenning over the last few years. So, and he just couldn't do the job. So it'll be fascinating to see what Waterford will do. I'd imagine one of the wing backs, I'd say Callum Lyons, all pace. Now, Callum loves to attack, which has obviously been a feature of Waterford this year. So maybe Kevin Moran, the old dog for the long road, you know, who hasn't lost his pace either, and real pacey player, Kevin Moran. Maybe Kevin will be tasked with going one-on-one on Tony, and I'm sure Kevin would relish that as well. You know, Kevin Moran, a player for the ages as well for Waterford, you know, one of these guys that just should have an All-Ireland medal, a bit like Brick, I suppose, and the other team, Justin's team, would say, and Derek's, the end of Derek's time. But Kevin, for me, would be if I'm Liam Cahill, but Liam obviously could have Shane Fives or Shane McNulty in his head for it. But then again, if Kevin is the man, I'd expect Lohan then to slot Tony into the corner like he did against Limerick and start the Roman from the corner. And I mean, we don't associate Kevin Moran with playing cornerback. So look at it. It's the battle of minds is incredible here.
Yeah. Rory, that it's you'd like to see Sky put a player cam on that one there. If you got Tony Kelly being followed around the field by Kevin Moore, it'd be worth watching all on its own for 70 minutes.
And it would be absolutely fantastic. What a little mechanism or a little tool you could use for coaching for young kids trying to learn how to play the game in terms of positional sense and where you need to go to start to pick up possession. I think it's not a bad shout, Dalo, in terms of Kevin Moore, because He Tony Kelly is like, he's a ghost, you know, like he kind of ghosts, like it's you're almost, you know, he just appears out of nowhere. Next thing, bang, ball over the bar, and then you're saying, right, let's pick him up now. And the next thing, you just lose sight of him again, and he does the same thing again. And I think Kevin Moran is probably somebody with, I think the most important thing that Kevin would have is experience, not to lose his concentration, to actually not lose sight of him. Because he only really needs a half a second or a second just to get that little bit of yard of space, and he's going to do damage. But I think going back, and again, look, I don't necessarily think we should be... I hate having to overstate and overplay the venues. But I do think the venues are important because of when these championships are being played. And I think Páirc Uí Chaoimh, I personally believe that it was a mistake by Waterford not to go to Páirc Uí Chaoimh for the Limerick match. I think what Páirc Uí Chaoimh would have suited their running game much better. I think the one thing that I noticed from the Limerick game was there was, I think there was about four or five, like, you know, these awful rucks that you see. And invariably, when you see that in a hurling match, particularly with Limerick, Limerick are going to win it. They're just champion at those types of things. So the ball was sticking a little bit better. Now, Thurles was in good shape. I think Páirc Uí Chaoimh is the closest thing to Croke Park that you're going to get. And I think when you're playing a sort of an intricate running game where you're dropping numbers and you're looking to run the ball and sort of it's short hand passes in terms of your transition from ball up the field, I think the better the surface, the better it will suit your game. And I think that's where Waterford will actually have a little bit of an advantage come Saturday, because I know that Brian does tend to favour a more direct approach. Would that be fair, Dalo?
Yeah, I thought, you know, early in the year, everyone was on about that. But I thought the last day, I mean, they were back to maybe a lot of the traits. Even Davey referred to it, I suppose, in his interview afterwards, the controversial one about someone annoying him in the stand. And he said, you could let Clare play the way that suited best to them. And yeah, I don't think they have any fears about going into a fast surface. Fellas like David Reedy, Shane O'Donnell, David Fitzgerald, Colin Malone, they're quick players.
They had to run it into the wind a good bit last week anyway, didn't they?
Yeah. Ryan Taylor is lightning. Like, you know, so I don't think that'll bother them. The backs, like they brought back in the big hitters as well with Patrick O'Connor, Jack Brown possibly come back into play as well this week. He's fit again. So I don't think they'll have any fears for it. But I think you're right, Rory. I think it just lends for a better game, I think. And I think we can really look forward to it. The other thing I think is, from a Clare point of view, why I'm kind of fancying Clare is that, you know, all this Tony Kelly talk, I think if I'm another Clare player, if I'm a Shane O'Donnell, if I'm a David McInerney going back in, and you know, these little WhatsApp going around of the Clare team has been named, and it's Tony Kelly in goal, Tony Kelly corner back, you know, it's 15 Tony Kellys. So it's lovely. Like, I mean, Lohan is probably taking them aside and saying, you know, the other guys, you know, Cahill Malone is having the season of his life at wing forward, and Rory Hayes, who got a late call up against Limerick, is having an outstanding season cornerback. Conor Cleary has nailed down number three. You'd have to say he held Gillan the first day, really good again the last day on McDonald's. So a lot of positives for Clare. Shane Amore, I thought, back to his best the last day as well. So I just feel this talk about stop Tony Kelly or stop Clare, this might just play into Clare's hands for the weekend.
Colm, if you look at the spread of scores now, I know they were playing Limerick in the Munster final, but it's not that different now. There was a heavy reliance on Stephen Bennett Freeze and like a few from play, but like if you look at the spread of scores between the two teams, it's not that different. Neither of them are exactly, you know, they're not getting cricket scores from a handful of players. Like they wouldn't be alone in that, but it's not only Clare who are having over-reliance on one player. You could say Stephen Bennett from Place Balls is doing an awful lot of the heavy lifting for Waterford as well.
Yeah, and there were really, you know, there was one free he took in the first half. It must have been 110 metres. He was right back, and the angle that it was at, you would think there must have been 110 metres for that to carry. Bit of a wind, but not hugely significant, but enough to carry it. So it's a real asset to them. As I said, Gleeson scored 3 points. Desi Hutchinson got the first ball he got. He put it over, and I thought, he's really going to take off here. And he didn't. And, you know, the Limerick defence the last day, really, when they got to it in the last quarter, I thought they were magnificent. And I would have...
Bit of Sean Finn about that, Colm.
Huh?
Bit of Sean Finn about that.
There was. And, I mean, there was a block down there in the second half. But even Kyle Hayes, you know, I would have been questioning maybe taking him out of where centre forward. But I think we saw in the last... in the second half, but especially the last, after the water break, just how forceful a halfback he is. And they shut them down physically in the end of it all. The Waterford attackers were shut down physically. I do think scores can be a problem. There was no goal chance created in the Munster final last weekend. No real goal chance from either team. That feeds back into what you were saying earlier about tip and goals and long range points. I do think scoring is an issue for Waterford.
Yeah,
and I just on that, Colm, your point about Stephen Bennett earlier absolutely blew me away watching on Sunday, and obviously we're doing analysis. His work rate as well. We associate him with all the beautiful flicks right back to his minor 21 days. And the goals he often scored and the free taking, but his work rate was incredible as well. I mean, he was the length of the field at one stage. I think Jackie showed it as...
Yeah.
And you saw him taking off as Liam Cahill, just if you don't work, I'd say, you don't, Liam.
You slack,
there's a new template set there. Sure. What another cracker to look forward to. Let's do.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a good note in which to leave it. So quickly, we'll get predictions. Colm, we'll go with you first.
Having said that Galway face an uphill psychological battle, I do think they're a very physically imposing team. I'm not completely bought by the winter hurling idea, and obviously Tip debunked that about themselves with the way they finished that game. But I do think there's a bit of power about this Galway team that just might take them over the line here. There's a lot of scoring power in the team as well. And I also think... I do think a rising tide lifts all boats, and I do think we will see other Clare players coming to the fore this weekend. I'm thinking particularly Shane O'Donnell, who put Tony Kelly in for the goal the last day. You know, he was very good earlier in the league, saw him in a game against Kilkenny, and I think he could really spark in unison with Kelly, and I'd be expecting something from him. I just give Clare and Galway edges here.
Okay, Dale up.
Yeah, I was completely arseways, Mike, tell you the truth. 2 weekends ago, I got nearly every game wrong. But last week, I was kind of back on the money. But yeah, I think I'd go along with Cullen with the Clare one. I think there's a buzz around Clare now. And that's very easy to forget as well that like just 2 seasons ago, no, we are missing Conlon, we are missing Duggan, but this Clare team were within an inch of putting Galway out, the All-Ireland champions, to meet Limerick in that final. So, like, these fellas don't, you know, I don't think they have any fear, and I think the win last week would have done a pile for them. They do have this third week syndrome, which you would be scared about a little bit, but I'd say clever enough as well, the lads won't overwork them this week. It'll be all just, you know, honing in and getting fresh again. I just think Clare might have enough. I think Colm's point is well made about Waterford feeling good about how well they played, but that can be really dangerous as well. That, you know, you're kind of, we're beaten in the Munster final, but fellas, I've seen plenty of ex-Waterford players on Twitter and said, saying, really proud of the boys, and somewhere along the way, but of course, Cahill being Cahill, I'd say we'll ground that. So great game, but I might give a nod to my own lads. And I just think Tip might shade it in Limerick. If it was in Croker, as Rory suggested, would I probably go Galway. But I just think Tip, with everybody back, with Breen firing, with Dan McCormack, Bonner got 45 minutes into the legs last week. Just think they might edge another cracker. But again, I wouldn't like to be having too much money on any of the two games, I have to say.
No, you wouldn't. Yeah. Rory?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd probably go along with Dalo in that I think the two teams coming in with wins under their belts as opposed to the two teams coming in off the back of defeats, I think will just the momentum will just probably be enough to carry the day. But I would expect two unbelievable contests in both, and I wouldn't be surprised if both went to extra time. Would not be surprised in the least, but I will go for Clare and Tipperary. Which would mean, by the way, a draw for the All-Ireland semi-finals.
Yep, that's right, yeah. I think
it's amazing all around that there has been no penalty shootouts.
They got so close on a few occasions.
Well, the Offaly and Down lads, Colm.
Sorry, the Ring Cup. The Ring Cup, the last.
And that final is on as well the weekend. And should be a great game. Down on a real roll, and David Herity training Kildare. It'd be great for them to get out there in Croker and show their stuff.
Yeah, it certainly will. We'll have updates on all those games on Sunday Sport and reports on the... Sorry, that'll be... Yeah, Sunday Sport, and we'll have reports on RTE.ie and on the News Now app. We got the three provincial football finals are on RTE.
Manic weekend for us. We're on the air 1 o'clock on Saturday for Tip Galway. Then we take a couple of hours off while we watch Clare Waterford. Then we're back on the air for the Bloody Sunday commemoration at 6 o'clock to build up to the Leinster football final, Dublin Meath. And then a big doubleheader then on Sunday in the Munster football final, Ulster football final. So it's a good weekend if you're a supporter.
If you like last Saturday, Rory, it'll be off for a good long walk in the morning and hit the couch. Except this Saturday, we won't be ending up with Katie Taylor.
Have the dinner early.
Yes, for those of us who have to deal with all the other sports, it's not quite as crazy as last weekend, but it's still a good one. Just to say thank you to Colm and to Anthony and to Rory. And to Kevin from earlier, and we'll catch you all again next week. Thank you very much. From this, how much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a
point, and there's the whistle. It's over. It's over. We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
What I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. It's over the bar.